What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics and open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Hello and welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and I'm so happy to have you here today. Today we have an amazing lady that is on the show as my guest, Manal Omar, and we're going to be talking about women stepping into their leadership power, their sexuality, their negotiating place at the table to create peace in the world. So this is going to be an amazing show. And, of course, at the end of the show, we have a Peace Brain meditation, so please stay tuned for that as well, a transformative meditation. So, as always, I open the show with a quote. And today I chose a quote from Socrates, and it's very short, but it's very powerful. He said, "The secret of change is to focus all of your energy not on fighting the old, but on building the new." And how true is that? We are in these changing times. We are in times where lots of old ways are falling, and we're trying to maybe prop them up. But it's really about letting them fall. It's really about creating something new, creating a new world, creating a world of peace. Obviously, that's what the Peace Brain Show is about. So we're really here talking about how we can do something new, do something a little different, but focus on what do we want in the world? How do we want it to look? So I love that he was saying focus all of your energy on building the new. So with that, I want to go into introducing my guest today. She is an amazing lady, and I met her in a women's conference at the President Carter's Center here in Atlanta, Georgia, talking about women and leadership and women and peace. And she has had an amazing career. So let me introduce her. Manal Omar is the CEO and founder of Across Red Lines. And she has a certification in global mental health, trauma, and recovery from Harvard Medical School and is currently a student at Sex Coach University in California. She has studied with many spiritual leaders over the last several years to combine the medical and neuroscience aspects of trauma and spiritual practice. Her experience as a humanitarian worker and peace builder for over 20 years has connected her with women's rights groups across the globe. She has worked with the U.S. government agencies, the World Bank, United Nations, Oxfam, and Women for Women International. She has served as an advisor for global figures, a trainer for peace building facilitators worldwide, and has mentored young leaders through Generation Change and YouTube Changemakers. Through her work, she has brought together the private sector, innovators, social media personalities, multilateral institutions, and civil society. She is a Truman National Security Fellow and an inaugural Foreign Policy Interrupted Fellow dedicated to including women in foreign policy and peace building. She was named among the top 500 world's most influential Arabs by Arabia Business Power in 2011 and 2012, and among the 500 most influential Muslims in the world by Georgetown University and the Royal Islamic Strategic Studies Center in 2009. In 2007, Islamic Magazine named her one of the 10 young visionaries shaping Islam in America. She holds a master's degree in Arab studies from Georgetown University, and a bachelor's degree in international relations from George Mason University. Her alma mater recently recognized her as one of its alumni exemplars for their 50th anniversary. And so I have something here that Manal writes herself. It's actually on her website. You can check it out as well. We'll give that in a moment. She writes, and I think it's very relevant for the show today. For most of my life, I avoided difficult questions that seemed to pit my gender against my religion. Repeatedly, it became clear to me, for me to truly be the Muslim woman I so desperately strive to be, I need to look at the shadows within our societies. And for me, the shadow centered around Islam's view of a woman's sexuality. Indeed, 20 years in humanitarian work and peace building across the globe leads me to believe that better times cannot be upon us until we talk about women's sexuality. We cannot hope to see the changes we want in the world without the power and strength of women, particularly women who are connected to their sexuality and life force energy. At the end of the day, the overarching theory of change for Across Red Lines is that inclusive societies can only be formed with the full participation of women. For women across their full for women to access their full leadership potential, they must master all parts of themselves. Wow, how powerful. So you can check out Manal's website. It is www.acrossredlines.com. That's acrossredlines.com. And she's also done a TED Talk that was done in San Diego, a TEDx talk called Women at the Negotiating Table, The Missing Piece in Peace Building. So check that out as well. Welcome, Manal, to the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's such a delight. I am in agreement that women need to step up to the table, and we need to own our sexuality, our power, our leadership potential to change the world, you know, to bring about world peace. And I loved the Carter Center's, the women's symposium that he hosted a couple years ago. It was so powerful with women from all over the world, including yourself. So where do we start? I guess I would say, what drew you to work for peace in general? How did you get involved in peace studies?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, I always say I don't know if I had any other option. You know, I was born in Saudi Arabia, moved to Spartanburg, South Carolina when I was still 6 months. So between, you know, being, you know, born in the Middle East with roots in the Middle East and growing up in the South and to Palestinian immigrant parents, you know, peace was, you know, automatically in me. I grew up constantly hearing people talking about the problems, and I think there was just a part of me from a very young age that didn't want to analyze the problems anymore, but really wanted to focus on what are the solutions. And that's really where I've dedicated most of my energy, and it's why I love the quote that you chose to open the show with. It is, you know, completely epitomizes my approach. Is, you know, we need to be focusing on what we want to see next. We need to be focusing on building. And I think particularly for women, you know, that fight energy that we've released is landing in ourselves, it's landing in our communities. And if we can shift that energy towards a place of where we're building, and building towards peace, and hopefully in a preventative manner, I feel that we would, you know, be able to really utilize that energy. And I always refer to it as the life force energy, because that's very much tied to our sexuality. It's literally what produces and gives life.
Exactly. I mean, women are the life bringers to the world. They, you know, produce the babies. It is, I know in metaphysical terms, and my teachers have told me that women are, just to use a number, up at the scale at like 100, whereas men are around 40, if you want to put it that way, in, let's say, in life force, because we have a baby-making machine, you know?
Absolutely.
And so women are how can I put it, very capable. They're capable of doing multiple things at once and taking care of everything and bringing in that higher, it's not really appropriate to say higher, but that more energetic, if you will, energy that is this life force. And so much when women are denied a place at the table, we're missing out on those talents and those gifts.
Absolutely, absolutely. And even though they may not be at the actual negotiating table, they're still at the front line. So, you know, women bear the brunt of war. They're the face of poverty. They're the face of refugees and displacement. And so, you know, oftentimes we may not see them in the negotiating room or at the peace table, but make no mistake, they are absolutely at the front lines doing work. And all the research shows that when you invest in women, you're actually investing in communities. I mean, rarely do women stop on their own individual success. Almost always they reach back, they pull their families, and they pull their communities with them.
Exactly. I think that's the impetus among a lot of these micro-lending agencies. When you lend to a woman to create a business, you're actually uplifting the whole community that way. So
Absolutely. Tell
us a little bit about your work in peace building and maybe working with the World Bank or United Nations or Institute of Peace or any of these other organizations you've been affiliated with.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, I have worked with several, you know, both on the multilateral, like you mentioned, the World Bank and UN. I also have had the privilege of working on the ground within grassroots organizations like Women for Women International and Oxfam. And, you know, through the over 20 years of working with this, I found us analyzing the problem and very little effort going into the solutions. And, you know, if I could be bold enough to say maybe even the prevention work. You know, by the time we're doing conflict management or trying to resolve conflict, it's often too late. I think one of the most painful realities of my work is seeing how preventable conflict is. You know, we see the early detection warning signs. You know, they're almost, you know, predictable. And women are very much a part of the early detection warning signs. When women aren't safe on the streets, it's much more indicative of a lack of policing, a lack of community police cooperation, a lack of the social contract. So it doesn't only impact women. So, you know, oftentimes, particularly when I would be briefing military or generals, I would point out, you know, it's not nice. It's necessary to approach women, to really see women. And it's a really important part of the strategy if we're looking at stabilizing countries, particularly countries in transition.
So give us a couple of examples, concrete examples of what the solutions might be that women can bring to the table.
So, yeah, let me give you an example. So let's look at the rise of violent extremism. And so, you know, it's something that's really plagued communities all across the world. And what we found is oftentimes if you're working with women, women will know when foreign fighters start to enter their communities. So most women know their neighborhoods inside out. I mean, they literally know the children who are playing on the street. And so when you start to see foreign children or, you know, some of the older recruiters coming in, women will be the first to kind of highlight that. Oftentimes, they don't have access and they're ignored. So by the time it escalates, by the time the extremists have actually completed recruitment, it's often too late. But if we were to listen to women and interact with them, you know, I call them the canaries in the mine. Like if we were to actually pay attention when they're raising the flags, we can get ahead of the curve. And I've seen this play out. I mean, I remember being in Kabul and women coming and saying, we don't recognize these children. We don't recognize these men that are in our community. I almost heard verbatim the same thing in Baghdad. I heard the same thing in Nigeria, and particularly in the north in Gombe. It was women who were like ringing the alarm bell saying, pay attention. These groups are not ours. These children are not ours. We don't have any control over them. We don't even know where they're from. And many times they were actually not from the country. They were sent in to recruit. And so, again, by the time the recruitment takes place, it's often, you know, too late. And I don't like this term too late. You can always try and combat and do conflict resolution. But if we paid attention to what the women were telling us from day one, you know, imagine what we could have avoided. And you know, that's one small example. You know, another example is when you start to see violence against women. Again, if I look at Iraq in the early days in 2003, you know, we had so many cases of rape that was happening on the street, which was almost unheard of during the time of Saddam. And at the time, you know, particularly the U.S. military was dismissing it, saying, oh, this is part of the violence in the culture. And we were saying, this is unheard of in countries like Iraq at this scale. And it had far more to do with the lack of policing. It wasn't just about sexual violence against women. It was a lack of police on the streets. There was a lack of moral authority. And so if we had actually started investing in community policing and police training, we could have avoided, you know, an incredible amount of violence that ended up taking place. And we went in and started doing police training almost 10 years after. And so, again, the canaries in the mine.
Yes.
You know, I can give you so many other examples. I mean, you know, when the law, the personal status law, which is really a big indicator. And you mentioned President Carter, and one of the things that I deeply appreciate that President Carter said at the conference that we were together and has repeatedly said is that to really understand a nation, look at how they treat their women. So, you know, I always joke and say, if you don't want to listen to the women, listen to the men, because President Carter, Kofi Annan, we've had several men step forward and say, if there was a lesson we've learned, it was pay attention to the women early on.
Wow. So how can women and girls, gosh, I was going to say be better trained or worked into the system to have a voice, to be able to pay attention to them?
Well, I think this is where Cross Red Lines comes in. It's one of the reasons why I took a step back. I mean, you know, having most of my life change, you know, chasing the conflict curve, the big question in my mind was how can I completely scale back and get ahead of that conflict curve? And for me, it really is about inclusive societies. You know, how can we create inclusive societies? And women are the key to unlocking that inclusivity. Now, what I often say is it can't just be any woman. It has to be a fully integrated woman, which means, and this goes back to the life force energy and why I feel the sexuality is such an important part, for a woman to be whole, she can't have, you know, parts of herself compartmentalized or suppressed parts of herself. And so by integrating that into her leadership style, then she becomes fully able to do the transformation within herself, which then translates into family and community. And so it really isn't about, and I think this is one of the things, if I were to say that I learned within my own personal journey, is it isn't so much about the macro. You know, we can't change so much that's out of our circle of influence. It really does go into the micro, into that personal journey, which inevitably will affect the communities. And so that's what I hope to do with Across Red Lines is, one, is to give women leaders an opportunity to revive. You know, we're spent, we're burnt out, you know, we're literally running on empty, and, you know, that will only get us so far. And, you know, whenever we have investments in anything, we usually give it to family and community. Women will, you know, are less likely to invest in themselves than they are in their children or their families. So how do you create that balance where it isn't an either or, but it's an actual and, where you're able to do both? And I think that's one of the things that we've been missing. It's almost an all or nothing. Like a lot of the approaches, and particularly because this, you know, Cross Red Lines targets women of faith, you know, we tend to fall in between the cracks. You know, the secular model, the feminist model doesn't completely speak to us, and we can't wear rose-colored glasses within the religious institutions, which often have a patriarchal approach. And so what I hope to do with Across Red Lines is to have a faith approach, an integrated approach that doesn't marginalize men, actually integrates male allies, but really creates a safe space for women to completely own their own power without doing it or feeling that it has to be done in any way that's challenging or threatening.
So I want to explore this a little more because you said something that really piqued my interest. And then I want to get back to the faith-based model that you are speaking of now. Is you said that we can't, as women, suppress any part of ourselves, you know, to really be fully integrated and to step into our leadership roles. And so I'm coming from a Christian background, and the Puritan ethic is very much, you know, modesty and not be sexual, you know, that type of thing, only be sexual in the bedroom. That it's how, what does it look like, and I know this has many different probably answers, but what does it look like for a woman to not suppress any part of herself, to be fully a sexual being, if you will, or standing in our own power, and be that leader and still be not seen as a sexual object?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's funny that you say that. One thing I always joke about is growing up in the Bible Belt, you know, I always say I never know if I'm getting it from the Puritans or from the Islamic tradition, because I feel like I got hit by a double whammy in terms of both Southern and the Muslim. So I can really relate to that question. And for me, you know, I'm always very clear, like, I don't believe I have one answer that will unlock women's power.
Right.
What I try to do through my workshops is remind women to trust their bodies. I mean, I view our bodies as the GPS system, it's a navigation system. And when you're in, you know, the mind can trick you, you know, you can lie to yourself, but your body will never lie. And so what I do through the workshop is get women to actually access their body. And a lot of ways, I mean, it's not, you know, we talk about sexuality, but it's not necessarily the act of sex. And I use Mother Teresa as a very powerful example. It's not about the actual act. It's about really getting in touch with the body, understanding, and unpacking the story that, you know, sacrifice and suffering builds character. You know, we've been sold the story for so long. There's almost a badge of honor to sit in suffering or to, you know, be the martyr. And that doesn't necessarily lead to transformations in communities. You know, what if we were to reframe the story and say that it's actually joy and pleasure that will connect us with the divine? It's actually joy and pleasure that can connect us to the ability to transform societies. And I think that's very alien for women. I mean, in most of my workshops, the first day is almost literally just giving women permission to think about themselves. And, you know, I try to bring back rituals like the Turkish bath, like, you know, aromatherapy and smells. You know, there's so much within not only the religious tradition, but I would say within indigenous communities that can really unleash feminine power. And, you know, what I worry about is a lot of women leaders, and globally, we value masculine style of leadership. And so a lot of women have adapted the masculine. And, you know, we don't need more masculinity in the world. We actually need more feminine energy.
It's true.
And
it's
so, you know, I tell people, you don't fight fire with fire. You fight fire with water. And water is the very epitome of women. It's fluid. It's flexible. It can really take on the shape that's needed within community. Again, water is the source of life. And, you know, it's not necessarily the fire that we need more of. It really is the feminine, and I just see it so dramatically. And honestly, I don't think I would have come to this conclusion without spending so much time in war zones. You know, it was dealing with militias. It was dealing with radicals. It was dealing with military. I mean, you know, our first response as an international community is to bomb. So, you know, if we're constantly using violence as a way of showing strength, it becomes the norm, and we've almost forgotten that there's another way of being, there's another way of conflict resolution, which is not violent, which is not aggressive, which can actually lead to dialogue and cooperation. And that's what I really hope Across Red Lines can epitomize, is for women to bring back the feminine style of leadership that I think the world is really, it's really hungry for.
Yes, I totally agree with you. And women are so much about relationship building. It takes a village, you know, to raise a child and to raise a community, to raise a family. So women are all about how we can work together. And you're right, that is missing from a lot of, not only obviously the peace negotiations, but just life in general, the way we build our communities, the way we talk to our neighbors. So that women's essence, I love what you were saying about the fluidity and the water of life. And yes, I totally agree. Joy and pleasure is really this building the new world, is to be one of joy and harmony and pleasure, ecstasy, just in daily life of our creativity. Because I think that's what you're referring to with your life force, is our creative force as well, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, and that's one of the things that, you know, I don't like to glorify war in any way, but, you know, I do feel privileged and honored to have been on a lot of the front lines in some of these conflict zones, because you see so much resilience, so much innovation. You know, people don't have the luxury of victimhood, and they're constantly finding solutions. They're constantly finding, I mean, you know, it sounds crazy. And again, I'm very careful not to glorify war, but, you know, some of my best memories are in Baghdad, are in Kabul, are in these war zones, because there was such a value to every minute. You know, we did not take the day for granted. And I think that is something that women can really own and share with the world, is how to be resilient, how to withhold shocks. I mean, we know, you know, in a lot of the workshops I always say, like, we know we're going to fall flat on our face. Like, that's not the goal. It's not to avoid falling flat on the face. It's knowing how to pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and start again. And I think women have it just built in, that resilience. And it's something that, again, you know, I keep saying the world is thirsty for, because they're really thirsty for the feminine. And that's what we bring to the table, is resilience, is innovation, and is community support. I mean, you know, the the idea of just individualism, and again, I really believe in honoring your own strengths, so it's not to negate the individual, but, you know, the obsession with individualism has left us with a hole in the collective, and there's a need to weave in the collective and the community again, and no better people can do it than women.
Absolutely, and I love what you were saying about you value every minute in a war zone or a war conflict area, that you're really talking about bringing it into present time. And I want to just mention that, you know, this new society that we're creating, I believe the new world of peace that we're all creating right now, is moving towards the time where we are in the present moment. You know, the past is gone, the future is ahead of us, we're creating from this moment. So not to waste any time, just what we can do from this moment. And that does spark, you know, tragedy always, or tests and trials, always spark innovation. Because obviously, clearly what was working was not working anymore, and so new solutions need to be found. It's unfortunate that humanity has to go through these kinds of turmoils or trials to come up with, and I think we do not ultimately need to do that, but so far, this has been our modus operandi, is to come forth with, whenever there's a break, a tragedy, that's when the new innovations pop up and something creative can take its place. So it's about learning to do that without being, if you will, forced to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So tell us a little more about this wonderful Across Red Lines organization that you've created. Your website is beautiful, and I know you just recently launched a new version, and you have workshops. So tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, thank you. So with Across Red Lines, I mean, what I hope to do with the website is to actually create dialogue. You know, I find when we push, particularly the conversation of sexuality, and I focus on that because that's the thing that's pushed most into the shadows. And when you push anything into the shadows, it creates, you know, space for abuse, it creates space for exploitation. And so through the website, through social media, through a blog that I have on muslimgirl.com, which is called Sex and the Divine, I bring these conversations to light, and I bring them through a religious framework, in this case, particularly through an Islamic framework. Part of the reason is, again, it goes back to permission. I find that women, and traditionally women, are the holders of ritual and tradition. So oftentimes they themselves don't want to go there. We can actually censor ourselves more than just the patriarchy. In fact, I love this one poet's quote. He says that men are so lazy that they have women hold patriarchy for them. And I think there's a lot of truth in there. So through the workshops, we really explore looking at the Islamic tradition, looking at the prophetic way, what it means to be a woman, what it means to access your life force energy. And for me, the success is really women getting in touch with their own bodies and learning to access their bodies in the decision-making process. And for that, you have to have open and honest conversations about sexuality. So, you know, during the workshops, it's very interactive. I've been doing this for almost 2 years, and I have to say no workshop, no day has ever been the same, because it really depends on the participants and where they want to lead. It's a very much a peer learning experience. I mean, you know, I've been almost obsessed with this topic and studying this topic, but I would by no means say that I'm an expert. So I see myself more as a facilitator and helping women access their own strengths. You know, I don't believe in programs that talk about empowerment, because I feel like empowerment is a very personal journey that comes from within. So I would never claim to be someone who's empowering women or things, but really facilitating the journey and just reminding, and again, the strength of women is that we're not alone. We shouldn't have to do this alone. So the workshops bring together women. It's peer learning through structured exercises, and very, very interactive.
Fantastic. And so who comes to these?
So most of them are Muslim women leaders. There's one coming up in New York, and there's an organization called Salam Shalom, which is a Muslim-Jewish interfaith community. And so several Jewish women have actually signed up for the workshop, which I'm extremely excited about. It'll be my first interfaith workshop. So I'm very excited about the New York one, but I've also done workshops in Lebanon, in Nigeria, and in the Gulf. And most of it is women leaders who, you know, unfortunately reach a breaking point. You know, my goal is for people, for women to invest in themselves before they reach that point. So, you know, oftentimes I find women leaders who are you know, burnt out, women who are on the verge of divorce or just, you know, emerging from a divorce. So, you know, it really is women who kind of hit either, you know, a big obstacle or a plateau who know that they have more in them. You know, you kind of know your strengths and you know it inside, but you just need that extra nudge. And that tends to be most of the women. It's not necessarily grassroots. It is focusing on women leaders who have in their own right achieved so much but just want to take themselves to the next level.
So you mentioned a workshop in New York. I know you have one coming up in November, the 9th through the 12th. Where is that one? Is that one in New York or something else?
Yes. Yeah, no, that's done in New York. It's upstate New York. I've partnered with a wonderful retreat called Casa Buddha, and the owners have a very strong commitment to, you know, spiritual growth and to, you know, healing and to the community. So I'm really excited about this partnership. And, you know, a big portion of my workshops, I almost always try to base them in a very natural setting. You know, nature mm-hmm. is one of the greatest healers. So even without doing anything, just being in the midst of nature, it's a great revival and it's a great way of really rejuvenating. So, you know, a big portion of my workshops have to do with nature and also have to do with water. I always have exercises with water, since you like the water example. So, yeah, that's taking place in November, from the 9th to the 12th.
Excellent, excellent. And I know you have that on your website, and the workshop title is called Know Yourself to Access Your Strength Workshop. Fantastic. Oh, gosh. So
yes.
You came into this. I want to explore something. You are a Muslim woman, and you are coming from that faith tradition. So tell us a little bit about, I know this has been the key point of your journey here, but how, tell us a little bit more about that, and then how we can, I'm just thinking here in the United States, there's such a misunderstanding of the Islamic traditions and faith. How can you help us understand that a little more? I know that's a huge question. I didn't mean that to make it a big thing, but so.
No,
first of all, your personal journey.
I mean, absolutely. So, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I've always identified as a Muslim woman and always been proud of that part of my identity. You know, I feel that I have several identities, you know, being Muslim, growing up in the South, being Palestinian, being a child of immigrants, you know, being female. That, you know, there's so many different elements. And I really came to a point where I started to struggle with my authenticity, and I felt like my gender was almost in opposition with my religion. And I think, you know, at a younger age, you just avoid. And so I would avoid the contradictions. I would avoid the hard questions. And, you know, you read the quote from my blog, which really epitomizes the realization when I realized, you know, as you grow and as you expand, you really do have to challenge yourself. And I'm very lucky. I've had fabulous spiritual tradition, you know, teachers from different traditions. Actually, one is a Franciscan priest, Father Richard Rohr, who has just been so inspiring for me on a lot of levels. And, you know, particularly within the Islamic tradition, I remember going to one sheikh and saying, I don't know if I want to be Muslim anymore. I'm really struggling with this contradiction of what I want to be as a woman and what I think Islam says. And his response to me is very much how I built Across Red Lines, because he said, well, what is your quest? And I said, I just want to be authentic. I don't want to feel like a hypocrite. And he told me, if your quest is authenticity, it is the best form of worship. You know, to be authentic to what God created is more important than any labels or any rituals. And I think that for me really unlocked so much. And what I'm really happy was when I then started to explore those questions, I found that it was culture, it was patriarchy, it was tradition, it was interest, you know, power lying in men's hands really has to do with a lot of interest, and it's why my degree is in economics. And so I was able to find within the spiritual tradition, you know, a strong respect for women's agency. You know, women are the trailblazers within Islam. You know, when the prophet received his message, he didn't go to his uncle, he went to his wife. And she was the first person to enter Islam. So the first person to enter Islam was a woman. When the tribes put together the Quran, you know, they have to ask themselves, who can hold this very powerful book? And they, all the tribes decided to give it to a woman. So Hafsa bint Umar. You know, everyone knows Rumi, the Sufi poet, but the actual first Sufi to introduce mysticism to Islam is Rabi'a al-Awwiyah, so was a woman. The first martyr in Islam was a woman. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Islam started so heavily in the feminine. You know, obviously the divine knew that we would move away from the feminine. And if you look at a lot of spiritual traditions, you know, whether it's, you know, Jesus or Moses or Muhammad, you know, the role of women is so essential. You know, with Prophet Moses, it's literally a woman who saved his life. You know, obviously the role of the Virgin Mary is not something to ignore when you're looking at Jesus. So even throughout traditions, you see that the role of women very early on was powerful. You know, I think with, I have a whole theory about, you know, the very first attack on the feminine was when we thought we could own Mother Earth. And when land and inheritance became important,
yes,
people suddenly became obsessed with controlling women. But that's not how we originated, and it's not how humanity emerged. It really does tie to, you know, this falsity and these lies of scarcity and the lies of states and nations, which made women suddenly property. And I think we need to go back. You know, I don't talk about Islamic Reformation. I talk about Islamic revival. Because the original intent was very much an integrated approach where the masculine and the feminine create a divine union. And that's when we really find peace. That's where we really find, you know, there's a word I love in Arabic called sukaina, which is an inner peace. And that's, it's almost like a satisfaction. And I think that's what happens when the masculine and the feminine come together organically, is that divine union.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I agree with you completely. There's this, and that's really, oh, I'm going to step probably all over faith at this moment of Christianity, but the Trinity, because I may not be getting this correctly exactly, but for me, the Trinity really is about the feminine and the masculine coming together to make a third entity, the whole. And so it is this beauty in the world we're creating, again, talking about this peaceful world we're creating, and actually I'm a member of the Baha'i Faith now, I have been for almost 20 years, which believes that, you know, we're creating the most great peace, that there is, it will happen, that the world will come under this beautiful new way of having that divine union you're talking about. And, of course, each person runs masculine and feminine energy in our kundalini and our union within ourselves, regardless of our gender, from our physical bodies. Mm-hmm. So it's bringing that balance together, and I think that's what we're bringing back to the world, is the balance. And you're right, that will create that harmony and peace
eventually. And I'm glad that you mentioned kind of the physical form, because I do want to point out, especially just because so much of the language of masculine and feminine can, you know, be very much in a heterosexual terminology, but for me it's the energy, it's not the physical form. And so I think that really does leave space for inclusivity in a lot of different ways. And you know, I think particularly within the Islamic tradition, it's something that I talk about and try to unpack as much as possible, so that we're not limiting ourselves just in terms of heterosexuality and the conversation of the binary and the dual, but
correct,
really looking at the energies coming together in whichever physical form that they may.
Exactly. Thank you. That's an excellent point. Oh, goodness. So how do you want, what's your vision moving forward? What are your goals to achieve with Across the Red Lines?
So, you know, my goal really is to create a safe space. You know, I don't think that, you know, with over 20 years, I'm very cautious to have even, you know, any idea of transforming lives or transforming communities. I mean, that's my dream and my hope. But the actual goal is just to be able to have a safe space to start these conversations. You know, I believe in the power of words. I believe in the power of dialogue. And just creating that safe space will begin to unleash the power that, you know, whether it's the feminine or the masculine or whatever it is that we're missing. And that's really the goal here. It's just create that safe space, you know, create the dialogue and have it based on information. You know, for a lot of people, moral authority lies in religion, and it's why I'm doing it through a faith lens. I feel that there are very powerful and very successful women's groups out there, and I wouldn't want to duplicate what they're doing. What I do feel is women of faith fall through the cracks. And that's my particular target, is creating a safe space for women of faith. And I'm really excited. I mean, I've had, you know, Mormons reach out to me. I've had Quakers reach out to me. So it's been a very validating experience that this isn't just about Muslim women. It really is an overarching women of faith. And, you know, we're living in a time of mass polarization. I mean, you know, America is a great example, but it's truly global. And again, we're living in a time of binary. So I feel like women of faith have a foot in both of the polarized worlds and can actually be a crucial element in healing and building bridges between those worlds. So it goes beyond women. It really goes towards inclusive societies. And that's my ultimate goal, my ultimate theory of change, is well-integrated women lead to inclusive societies.
Excellent. And I agree completely. It is... From my faith tradition, it talks about that all the religions come from the same creator, from the same source. And so we
Absolutely.
Are all learning to work together and to realize that there is this divine message that has been given to humanity as humanity has, if you will, gone from childhood into adolescence and now into adulthood as a global society. We are learning to work together as opposed to being in our clans and our tribes and our city-states and our nation-states. We're actually a world citizenry.
Yes.
So coming together in that way is very important.
Yes. Actually, one of the workshops that I do is called Build Your Tribe. And the idea is, how do we build a tribe that's based on a value system? Because I really believe, like you said, the systems are falling apart. So what's the new system? So how do we move away from geography, race, color, religion as the thing that bonds us, but actual values and principles that create the basis of a tribe?
Well, that is where religion comes in. I mean, you know, and religion's gotten a bad rep, obviously, of what humanity has done with it. But in the purest form of all the writings and of a faith-based, a divine message, those are where your values come from that are actually applicable to all.
Absolutely. I mean, I quote Pope Francis a lot in terms of, as dangerous as religious extremism is religious reductionism. And, you know, I really do believe that, you know, religion can play, I mean, you know, the churches, the temples, the mosques, the synagogues, they were the original first responders. I mean, before you had NGOs, before you had civil society, it was the religious institutions that were responding to humanitarian crises. So, you know, we like to focus on them as the problem, but we forget that they are an essential part of the solution.
You're right. And even here in any city, not just Atlanta, but any city, the churches, the synagogues, the mosques, they all play a place in working with the homeless, working with those who are mentally ill, working with those who really are downtrodden and need to be uplifted. So you're absolutely correct. Our society has not necessarily learned how to do that very well. Civil society, in other words.
Yeah.
So... We still have another 5 minutes or so. What topic do you want to explore?
let me see. I guess, I have to say I was really struck by the quote that you started with. And you know, it's one of the things that I'm really hoping that people will begin to understand more and more. I worry that our energy is, you know, it's finite. It's not like we're going to be able to continue protesting or fighting. And so, my secondary dream across red lines is how we can actually take that energy towards building and really envision, you know, what I keep telling people is, like, I don't want to talk about, you know, 2020 elections or presidential elections. Like, I want to go to 2070 and work backwards. Like, what do we want to see ahead, and how do we start to work backwards? Because I really do believe the systems are falling apart, and I tend to not believe in sabotage or in ill intent. I think systems emerge probably from a place of good, but when they're no longer in use, they start to harm. So, you know, patriarchy probably emerged from good intentions of protection and providing. So it's not necessarily the enemy. And the way people will actually let go of power is when they don't feel threatened. You know, I've seen this in so many war zones where the people who are in power are holding on to power because they know that once the transition happens, that they'll have a heavy price to pay. So, you know, really looking at the spirit of truth and reconciliation and how to allow old systems to, you know, really just
dissolve, yeah.
You know, not necessarily dismantled or blow up or, you know, I mean, it's allowing them to just organically dissolve and make space for the new system. And it's not a very popular position. A lot of people get frustrated when I say that because they feel, you know, it's time to fight, it's time to take down. And, you know, I just worry that that's us burning energy that can be used to create rather than using that energy to destroy. Because, you know, it's the same source, the same thing that creates destroys. And so, you know, I really try to encourage activists, you know, how can we bring that energy towards creation and not focus on the fight and the destroying and the dismantling?
Exactly. And you have, there's such a beauty in the creating the new. It's not about necessarily having it come after the destruction. It's about now. It's about starting now with building. And there's so much. That's what I love about peace building, actually. There is so much going on in the world that is creating these peace building efforts, that interfaith groups coming together. I'm heading for the Parliament of World's Religions in November, and this wonderful group of interfaith youth that are in Cape Town, South Africa are presenting, for example, and I'll be meeting them there. They are really changing South Africa, changing their area, and working actually now across the globe. And so it's just when we take the moment to step back and to really examine, there are so many, as you pointed out, wonderful groups working now to create this new change, this new vision.
Yeah.
But of course, we're being bombarded by all of the destruction that's happening. And if we would just turn and focus and work with those who are working for positive change, this world, I think, could change in an instant, very quickly.
Yes. And, I'm a fatal optimist. You know, I do believe that we're headed in that direction. And, you know, the news will focus on the bomb that goes off. But, you know, I had the privilege of witnessing, you know, 30, 40 people rushing in to help. You know, it's not just about that one incident of violence. It's about entire knowing. You know, at one point in a lot of the countries I worked in, there was the pattern of double bombs. So they would bomb, pull people in, particularly first responders, and then a second bomb would go off. People knew that, and they still rushed in. And so that's the part of war I choose to see. I choose to see the people who are rushing in, not the one person who set the bomb off.
Yes, absolutely. And that's where that moral, the ethics, the innate, I think, ability of human beings to come from the heart and that compassionate space to really help each other, to really uplift each other. And that's what will make a difference. And certainly women help to bring that pause to the anger and to say, wait, how can we work together? And of course, men are so capable of this as well. We just don't give them the permission, if you will, to honor that part of themselves, the compassionate part of themselves, and to help women create
Absolutely.
That new way of doing it. So go ahead.
Dad. No, I was going to say, it's actually one of the things, one of the most pleasant surprises about creating Across Red Lines was that it wasn't just women that supported me. I mean, I was overwhelmed by the support from men from the community. And I really do believe when we hold men accountable, they rise to the occasion, you know, and it's not, again, you know, not being in the binary, not being in the either or, but really looking at the and that connects us.
Excellent. So is there a final words of wisdom you'd like to leave with for our listeners tonight?
No, I mean, I think the only thing I would say is just repeat the idea that, you know, nobody knows their self better than each individual, and that's really where the power comes, is really finding that inner voice and trusting it, and the body is the greatest guide. You know, we're often taught to abuse or mistrust our body, but it is the navigation system. Don't shut it down.
Excellent. I love that. Oh, my goodness. Manal, it's been a delight to have you on the Peace Brain Show. I really thank you for taking the time. And I know you're traveling. You're doing just amazing work. So thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for hosting me. I'm really honored to be on your show. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. So again, you can find out more about Manal Omars at her website, which is Across Red Lines, AcrossRedLines.com. And check out her TEDx talk in San Diego that was entitled Women at the Negotiating Table, The Missing Piece in Peace Building. And please join her workshop if you are a woman leader who is being burned out and needs some rejuvenation. Please go to her workshop in November that's happening on the 9th through the 12th. Again, it's listed on her website. So take a breath. We're going to go into our Peace Brain meditation. And I just invite you all to ground, to become centered, to be in the present moment, as we were talking about, to give yourself that energetic connection between your body, the base of your spine, and the center of Mother Earth. I like to envision a beam of light, perhaps, coming out of the base of my spine, going all the way down into the center of the planet, and anchoring into Mother Earth, and feel her energy. In fact, let's do that. Let's just say hello to Mother Earth and send a hello down that grounding wire, that grounding cord, and notice how she receives it. Notice that she will send you a hello back. And allow her beautiful hello and her earth energy to flow back up through you, perhaps through your feet, or just back up that grounding cord and into your body, filling yourself with that beautiful Mother Earth energy. As we talked about today, yes, natural places on the earth are so uplifting. They really anchor ourselves into our bodies, into the earth, but they also anchor our spirit and then allow the spirit to fly forth in that creativity that is yours uniquely. So take a breath and imagine that you are in a beautiful forest, walking alongside a stream with a babbling brook. Everything smells delightful, clear, clean air. I recently did this in a beautiful place in the northwest part of the United States, in a forest, a national park on Mount Rainier, with the big trees and the fir trees, so you get that scent of the pine, of the fir, the conifer oils. Aromatherapy is very important, how our senses can be heightened. So smell the conifer trees. Smell the damp earth. Feel the bounce of your feet on the moss and the ancient forest floor with all of its impact of peat and moss and leaves that have become impacted into the soil. Stroll a bit and realize that you are never alone, and yet you are complete within yourself. So see the big trees, hear the birds, feel the wind in your face, the breeze. And I invite you to go within and really honor your own self, your own spiritual self, your spiritual light. And also know that the spirit light, this lamp that you are, is contained within your physical body, and very much connected to your physical body. So tune into your body right now and to how you're feeling. Tune into the subtle feelings of the wind on your face, of the way you're walking, your feet on the Mother Earth floor, or wherever you are, sitting in a chair, laying down, outside, inside. Are you hungry? Are you warm? Is your skin moist or dry? What do you need to affirm your body's, your body temple's ecstasy and beauty and flexibility and life force? Pay attention to your body. It truly does have all the answers for your life's path. So take a breath. Feel the air going into your lungs. Take the moment and pause. And love your body. Love it. Send it love and light, just as Mother Earth is sending you love and Father Sky is sending you light. Feel the union of the two, of the divine feminine and the divine masculine within you. For you are divine yourself, and your body is your temple to walk on this earth and to be of service, to create that new world we're talking about, to build anew, to build this world of cooperation and unity and relationships among all the brothers and sisters of humanity and all the life forms on this planet. You have a unique role to play. So turn on that creativity, turn on your peace brain, and be aware that you have permission to be creative, to use your gifts, to lay the foundations and build the relationships for this wonderful, peaceful world to come. So take a breath, bring yourself awareness back to the room or wherever you are, and thank you so much for attending today on the Peace Brain Show, listening in to my guest, Manal Omar, and you can find out more about her again at acrossredlines.com. And if you want to connect with me, Dr. Gail Lash, you can find out more about me at tourismforpeace.com, or you can email me at hello@peacebrain.org. We can talk about how you can create a place of peace, a peace park, where we can continue these dialogues about peace, find community solutions, and work together to create a beautiful, peaceful world. So again, thank you so much for tuning in to the Peace Brain Show. Please go forth and put your peace park on our World Peace Trails map. Many, many blessings. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace plans for your business or organization, and her recently published book, Opt for Peace, 9 Essential Steps to Achieving Peace, Power, and Prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 1 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.